when email first came in, it was like, gee, I'm so keen to get an email. You'd be so excited to open one. But now, how much time do you spend just chucking things out and maybe giving them a 1 or 2 second look?
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always, and today I'm absolutely delighted to be having a conversation with Dr. Frank Papadopoulos. Many people will know Frank as one of the founders of Centaur Software, the company that provides dental for windows to thousands of practices around the world. Not only is Frank an expert at running a software business along with his partners, he brings 30 years of clinical dental practice to the table as well, not just as a clinician, but as a business owner. In today's conversation, we cover a lot of territory. We really do go uphill and down dale on lots of things. And one of the recurring themes that we kind of come back to in the conversation with Frank is change and the fact that change is constant in our life and how to look at the opportunities, to spot the opportunities and take advantage of those opportunities, something which Frank has been able to do with tremendous grace and aplomb over a career of 25, 30 years. Frank brings so much experience and insight to the conversation that is always, I would say, have a pen and paper handy because what Frank shares is really profound and not everything is really obvious in what Frank says. I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to this episode a couple of times. Listen to the not just what Frank says, but the subtext to what he's saying, because there's so much gold there that I know that if you pick it up and run with it, it'll really and dramatically increase the productivity, efficiency, profitability, and enjoyment of your business as well. Now, just a quick little addendum. In our conversation with Frank, I did introduce him as the CEO of Centaur Software. He asked me to mention that he is not the CEO. He has three founders there, three equal pillars. So we've changed CEO to be the Chief Entertainment Officer, a mantle that Frank is happy to wear in that regard. So as always, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to you. And with that, any further ado, here's Dr. Frank Papadopoulos. Frank Papadopoulos, thanks so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things in Sydney, mate?
Today, Sydney's looking wonderful. Blue skies and a couple of little clouds here and there, but it's looking great. Great to talk to you, Jesse.
We've had a few conversations, you know, prior to this, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you. But a little birdie shared a little fact with me the other day, Frank, that I didn't know up until I think yesterday or the day before. Now, as most people know, you're the founder and CEO of Centaur Software. You've obviously got a background in dentistry, having owned a practice. But I heard that Centaur Software is 25 years old this year. Is that correct?
Believe it or not, it is this year. Actually, next month, to be exact, September, is 25 years ago when we established the company.
Congratulations, because that is an incredible milestone. You've owned and operated a couple of successful businesses, obviously your practice and Centaur Software, which is, you know, widely known as the parent company of Dental for Windows, and that's, you know, got a huge following here and around the world. What I wanted to just to talk about before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of business and all the rest of it is, can you just give the audience a little bit of an overview of your background? What was it that, you know, led you to dentistry? What was it that led you into software development? How did that all come about? It's not really the normal career path.
No, it isn't. And I was thinking about it from time to time. It crosses my mind, how do we end up where we are? And in my particular case, looking back teaches us a lot of lessons. And one of those was as a student, when I was going through high school here in Sydney, I didn't really know what I wanted to do exactly. I knew I had good marks to get into something to do with the health sciences, but dentistry wasn't really something that I wished to become from day one. But it turned out to be the perfect match for me because I love doing things with my hands, and I'm very dexterous and through hobbies and the like. And when the best marks I could achieve were to do with dentistry, I jumped at the opportunity. So that was back in 1982, 83. And I started my dental career at Sydney University, my dental student days, which was a wonderful experience. to go through. I had some of the most fun times there going through the dental school. Not that it was easy, as you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how I got into doing dentistry. As time went on, I completed the course successfully, getting some pretty good marks at the end of it. My background as well, having parents that are Greek, they used to have their own shop. So I used to be as a toddler growing up in the shop and seeing business and dealing with customers. So graduating and opening up in my mind the shop wasn't that far away from what I could see from my parents running a place. So although it was on a small scale, it gave me the confidence after a couple of years of learning dentistry to actually open up my own clinic in the suburb where I went to school. One thing leads to another, and one of those things was going back again in time to my childhood and teenage years where I liked computing as well. And I thought, how do you marry these things, you know? I'm sick of doing paper. I don't like writing things, you know. I'd like to do it in a more efficient way and a way that can help run the business and report on the business. So that sort of ignited my thinking of how can I bring computing into dentistry? And that was around 1991. And I started a little project solo on my own to try and write something to help me in the clinic. I don't know if you're probably young to remember what was around then in terms of software, but there was the birth of the Mac was around and the birth of Windows was just starting with the most decent version of Windows 3.0.
I remember 3.0.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I remember DOS more than that, though.
Oh, you remember the DOS days?
Oh, yes, they were hard.
They were difficult times. So I looked around. I thought I'd buy something. You know, why build it? Buy it. It's already been done. And I was quite disappointed in what was around. At the time, it was didn't do much. They didn't do much. They required a lot of work to get simple things done. They weren't graphical either. So to me, it was a step backwards, and I decided not to bother purchasing anything for the clinic. And I just started slowly, like a hobby, building my own thing. But soon enough, I got stuck because I'm no programmer. My passion at the time was to do things in dentistry and not to be doing programming. So one thing led to another, and I stumbled upon, or somebody stumbled upon me, who happens to be my business partner today, is Dr. Yuri Timbler, a recent Russian immigrant back in 1991. From the collapsing USSR, where he had left and tried to make a start here in Australia. And through a series of incredible coincidences, he tracks me down, knowing that I needed some help with software development. And he just asked me one Sunday on the phone, can I come and see you? Maybe I can help you. And that was the beginning of this new journey into software development for dental clinics.
Isn't it funny because there's these thin threads, which when you think about it, Frank, I mean, it's almost like a sliding doors moment where, you know, had that phone call not happened or had you not met Yuri or anything like that, you know, could well have turned out that, you know, Centaur Software didn't exist. So it's been, you know, one of those, you know, I suppose, happy coincidences that things have worked out so well for you, which is great, and so well for the dental profession at large, because I know there is thousands of practices that now use your software to run their business, which is an incredible testament to you and what you've put together.
It's funny how we should be saying yes to a lot of opportunities, even just to explore them, to give them a chance. And saying yes to Yuri that day was a good move. Although it wasn't easy even now meeting Yuri, because we didn't have any money. We don't think like venture capitalists. I come from a small background. I don't think of developing mega futures 25 years on, future planning and et cetera. It wasn't in my mind. It was like, I want to solve a problem was in my mind.
But see, isn't that, I think, it's just that one little phrase, and I just want to, you know, for the listeners here, Frank's just dropped a really lovely entrepreneurial gem right there, because you know, for anyone in business, it's really about solving problems, Frank. And what you did very succinctly is you identified a problem. You identified that there wasn't really a great offering in the marketplace that allowed, you know, practices to dispense with paper to operate more effectively and efficiently. And you set about creating a solution to that problem. And so I completely agree that if you were to look back at the start of your journey, you probably had no idea it would end up where you did. But what a wonderful entrepreneurial seed that you planted, which was to solve a problem.
That's exactly right. And it's everywhere. As a matter of fact, if there wasn't problems to be solved, there'd be no need for any of us to do anything.
Exactly.
And, you know, our patients come to us because they have a problem, you know, even if it's maintenance, even if it's just for a recall. They come to visit us because they want to be healthy. That's their problem. How to achieve that? So unless we're serving, we're not useful in this world. And me doing dentistry, doing software, others doing their vocation in this world is basically there to serve. And it is wonderful.
I think it's an absolutely fantastic thing. Mate, I wanted to just pick up a couple of threads that you've laid down for us in this conversation already, and I want to pick up a few of those and run with them. You mentioned to me that you grew up in a family that ran a business and your parents had a shop. What I'm curious to understand is, because a lot of people did not have that upbringing. Some people's parents might have worked for someone else or had worked for the government or whatever it might have been. What sort of values, lessons, and things did you pick up from your parents, either directly or through observation? What do you think are the greatest gifts that they instilled in you?
That's a good question, Jesse, because where we end up being is definitely a product of our influences and experiences during our life, particularly our childhood. And one of those things was seeing that one needs to work, put effort in. And another thing I noticed with my parents, they weren't afraid to put in long hours and they weren't afraid to try things and fail. They didn't brood over problems, but they did move on to find how to solve them. So they always had a general upbeat attitude towards work. And that got instilled in me not to be afraid of working. As a young dentist, I think coming out, I was working 7 days. I didn't mind. I was so keen to get the business to grow. I had no fear of working myself to death. It wasn't going to happen, because it was something that I enjoyed doing. So that's something I got out of them. I thought that was very valuable. Although even as I went through university myself, and you're right, not everyone's got this background where they're brought up in service industry or running in a shop with their parents. It's not something people can't get. It can be acquired. So podcasts like this and learning is a non-stop thing, And that was another thing I picked up from them, even though they were barely educated outside of high school in Greece. Still, they were avid readers and wanted to study things.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there. Again, so for anyone listening at the moment, we're talking to Frank Papadopoulos from Centaur Software, the business responsible for Dental for Windows, which is a practice management software tool used by thousands of practices across Australia and around the world. And again, some lovely gems of wisdom coming from distilling a hard work ethic and a constant desire to learn and to improve. And Frank, just as we were discussing some of those things about your upbringing and the journey of your parents as well, you mentioned to me that in your practice that, when you started out, you were happy to work 7 days a week because there was no fear you were going to work yourself into the grave, which is great. And just as a small side note, when we were talking the other day, I think I mentioned to you, I can't remember if I did, but my mother-in-law was one of your patients actually. So,
yes, that's right. What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. And my brother-in-law sometimes listens to the podcast. So, it's quite funny. They might hear this and go, oh, yeah, it's Frank. But one of the things I'm really curious to ask you about that is, obviously in those 25 years of, Centaur Software and a few more than that for your practice, things have changed and evolved. The marketplace has grown and changed and radically different to what it was when I graduated. And so what I'm wondering from your perspective is, Centaur Software, it's 25 years old in September. What have been the key attributes that you see in the software business, but also applicable to the dental practice, that have allowed your business to not just survive 25 years, I should say, but to really thrive and flourish? What have been the key skills and lessons you've picked up along the way?
Well, that's a good topic to explore. What happened with Centaur Software in the beginning was meeting up with Dr. Yuri Tsimbler was a valuable step, but it wasn't the complete step. What we had there is an idea and what I wanted to do with software. I didn't know how to build it. Yuri, on the other hand, was a software engineer indirectly. with experience on how to build systems. But that wasn't enough. And soon enough, we were stuck. And this is where the third sort of pillar of our organization comes into it. Early in 1990, Mr. Michael Sokol is introduced to the business. And he introduces the business aspect of commercializing an idea. It's simply not enough to have passion and desire and skill. You also need commercial experience and somebody to focus on. And Michael Sokol brought that to the mix. So in those early days, we then had three components that were absolutely necessary to go further. So from trying to grow the business, we started first with trying to solve a problem, which together we solved the business problem of dentists. And the next thing that became important is to work out how to service the dentist, because the beauty of the background that I had, both as working in a shop and dealing with customers and then with patients, is wanted to help the patients and serve them. And a big ethos within our company, even early in the piece, was to help the dentist. Help the dentist in supporting them, in teaching them and in training them in order to make them love the product. Just like a dentist does their work and wants to satisfy the patient, our job now became to satisfy the dentist and his staff so they can enjoy using the application. So that became another sort of running theme, another thread within the company's growth. And over time, in the early days, first it was just about solving a problem, but then as computing and IT became more pervasive and more spread out and more affordable, people wanted to go and do more with software. And we were in a good space to offer more because, A, we were in the business physically, was using the software all the time and refining it all the time. And we were getting back a lot of positive feedback from our small user base in Australia. And they would help us guide the next direction. And slowly but surely, it would build and satisfy more, and word of mouth would start to spread. And although we're talking in minutes here in this podcast, this timeline took approximately 8 years.
Wow, okay.
To get to a point where it was a cash positive.
So, okay, so that's a really interesting comment in itself, because there'll be a lot of people listening to this, and yes, they're in dental practice rather than a software business, but it took that period of time to have cash flow in excess of, you know, the outgoings. So how did you, firstly, how did you manage that? And B, you know, what advice do you have to anyone listening to the podcast about managing cash as a result of that? Because again, Frank, you know, when you and I graduated, you know, those years ago, it was a little easier to open a practice than it is today. It's not as it wasn't as competitive as it is now. And there'll be some people going, yeah, that whole cash flow thing. So what advice would you have to someone listening around cash flow particularly?
Well, with the situation in our particular case, and even in any business, really, you need to, at the early days, either you have to have good cash controls, understand and focus your spending on the necessities to keep things going and only the things that will return you some positive result, hopefully in the near future. There needs to be some sort of plan. And we had a plan of where we wanted to be. And we had it was more of a 5 or 6 year plan, although that ended up getting stretched to an 8 year plan. But you still need a plan. It doesn't matter if that plan doesn't work out to the letter. As long as you're better off having a plan than not having a plan, I think Eisenhower, the general, said that. So I'd never go into battle without a plan, even though he thought plans were useless. But having said that, with cash flow, we managed it. We weren't spending it on flashy things. We poured it back in the business continually. And we all ran actually separate jobs on top. So I kept running it as a dentist. I had my dental career on the side, funding the process. Yuri had another job on the side, and Michael had his full-time job on the side as well. Until we got to the point where there was what one might think of as a critical mass, that's the time when we all started to focus heavier and heavier on the business itself. That was a long-drawn exercise. There are alternatives, I must say. to do with getting venture capital in or loans from banks, but it's quite an expensive exercise. And looking back at it today, maybe I'd do it differently. But at the time, it was a case of work hard, invest in yourself, and keep going.
And again, yeah, just for anyone listening, I think that's very sage advice. You know, work hard, invest in yourself, I think is a really underrated piece of advice. I think it's incredibly important. But those cash controls, I think, are really critical as well. Frank, you mentioned earlier that you didn't spend money on flashy things. And one of my observations of some dentists who might be starting a practice is they tend to over-kit it at the beginning, and it becomes just a cash drain rather than anything else. And so for anyone listening, I think managing your cash is critical. And what Frank's outlined, there are some really key steps to do that. So if you're thinking about cash, just keep your powder dry as much as possible and watch those costs, because they can run away with you pretty quickly.
You'd be amazed at what you can do with a dental clinic. Patients will notice cleanliness. Just be clean. Clean and simple. It doesn't need to be the Taj Mahal, you know. You can become the Taj Mahal later.
Yeah, exactly. One of my when I moved back to Canberra, it's funny, you know, Frank, we had a practice that we sold, moved to Queensland for some years and then came back. And the practice we bought was, oh, look, it great practice, great patients and all this, but the fit out was, you know, pretty old and tired, you know, carpet on the walls, that kind of thing. Very, very, very stylish. Anyway, a friend of mine at the time, and I remember his advice very vividly, and he said to me, you know, Jesse, you know, you've got a patient base can buy a fit out, but a fit out can't buy a patient base. And I just have always remembered that, and it's just go, yep. So anytime I'm kind of looking at the fit out going, okay, we really need to do something about this, I just think, well, keep focusing on the patient base. And you're right, the cleanliness and those little details, they don't cost anything. They don't cost anything. It doesn't cost anything to put a smile on your dial and be nice to people either, so...
Just have a bright place, a bright place, a bright attitude. Like you're saying, smile, be welcoming, and you can't put a value on that.
No, not at all. So, mate, you've got the experience, you know, 25 years in business with this particular business, you know, probably more than that across your working life. One of the things that I've observed is, you know, things are changing quite rapidly in the world at the moment, whether we're looking just, for example, you know, computing and IT or even in the health sphere as well. I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit about being able to adapt to changing times, because I imagine in your working life, you've had to be resilient. You've probably had a few, you know, stumbles and hiccups along the way. How have you managed to overcome those sorts of little issues and keep putting one foot in front of the other? What sort of thoughts do you have around that?
The thoughts that I have around that live in the space of change. The only thing you can control is yourself. And even that's a struggle for most of us. The outside world becomes even more out of control. So coming to a point where accepting that change is going to be a constant is just a fact of both personal life and business life. And in business, we've seen it. I see it in dentistry now, over 27, 8 years of practicing dentistry, looking at the landscape, how it's changing. Dentists are a little bit slow in adopting changed behaviors and wishing that things were the way they were. They're just not going to be that way. This is the nature of life. It changes. So the same with our software company. We've started off with focusing on software, thinking that's the bigger issue. Then we also knew that service was a big component, so we focused on service. And then we had to change in terms of how to deal with competitors, to be aware that there is competition out there and they're not going to stand still and not move. And just the same as it happens in dentistry, that client, that patient, that dollar, everybody's chasing it. Everybody wants it. And you have to work out how are you going to be different from the other person? What are you going to offer that's more attractive to the other person that you're servicing? And constantly be prepared to evolve and learn. And that can be done in a lot of ways. But, you know, talking to people, listening to podcasts like this, following opinion leaders, learning, make it a big effort to read as much as possible on a diverse range of topics that interest you. So it's a never-ending story, you know. And marketing now is becoming a big thing, where it was like anathema to dentists to think of advertising and promoting themselves, but it's the way of the future, and it's an expectation if one wants to be in business for their lifetime.
I completely agree with that last point in particular. I agree with all those points, but that last one in particular I really resonate with. And I remember some years ago, Frank, to be called an entrepreneur as a dentist was almost like an insult, because the inference was that you were only in it for the money, or you're somehow doing something that was underhanded or not in the interest of the patient. But I think really the true essence of an entrepreneur is someone who adds more value than they take, someone who's able to adapt to change, they're nimble, they're flexible, and all those things. So I think the whole entrepreneur mindset and skill set is something that all of us in business need to embrace. And so, when someone calls me an entrepreneur, I think that it's the greatest compliment that, can be paid. But once upon a time, people used to use that word in a derogatory sense. But again, just coming back to your point around marketing and whatnot, Frank, because, one of the core functions of any business is to be able to attract and keep customers, patients or customers, whatever language you want to use around that. What sort of changes do you see in marketing specifically happening at the moment, whether it's in practice or in software or just general business? What sort of things do you see happening? What trends are you observing?
I mean, with dentistry, definitely, we all get bombarded endlessly by advertising these days. It used to be a case of, junk mail, and our letterboxes will be loaded to the point where you just chuck them out unless there was something specifically that attracted you.
Yeah, now it's your inbox.
Now it's the inbox. Hey, loaded. Everybody's got your email. So the change that I've noticed over the last decade, I would say, when email first came in, it was like, gee, I'm so keen to get an email. You'd be so excited to open one. And it costs nothing, to send an email. But now, how much time do you spend just chucking things out and maybe giving them a 1 or 2 second look, So what I'm learning and what I'm seeing in both the dental space and in our software space is that we need to find the balance between the electronic means, electronic being, by email or via SMS services, but the old touchy-feely way, the letters in the mailbox under your door, it has a place, It's not to be discarded forever. And the thing that has to happen with it, it has to change. It can't be the white envelope addressed to the householder type thing. It's got to be personalized. It's got to stand out somehow, It's got to be different. It's got to be relevant in a context that fits the reader. So what's happening now is becoming a bit more of a mixture, of a balance, where the software is able to reach out to the customer, be it a patient or any other, different what they call touch points, where you approach them one way, another way, and try and get some sort of reaction in order to do the next action and to give them a reason to contact your business in order to transact and show them what you're really like. So the marketing area I would say to anybody, don't just chuck everything in one basket of mail only or email only or SMS only. It's not. It's a mixture.
Hallelujah, brother. I am so glad that you made that point, because that is music to my ears, and I like to think of myself as a marketer, and for so long people have been saying, oh, I only do SMS reminders, or I only do this, or I only do that. And what you've highlighted very, very articulately, and I think very, very poignantly, is the fact that marketing does involve multiple touch points. It involves multiple forms of communication. It is not really wise to be focusing on one type of communication only, and whether you're all snail mail or all email or electronic. So I really, really love that. And the other thing that kind of for me, Frank, that lends itself to that conversation as well is that very rarely have I seen patients or practices who run effective marketing campaigns have one strategy where they go, we get all our patients from this. This is our special magic bullet. And when we fire this magic bullet, it rains patients upon us. And therefore, we just do this one thing. So my observation is that, a well-rounded marketing plan or well-rounded marketing initiative has lots of little things in there that each kind of contribute a bit to the overall pie. Is that how you see it as well?
No, absolutely, Jesse. Unless the business does it that way, they're not going to be reaching their potential. They need to mix it up and they need to balance these different modes against each other at times. Because, you know, like you're a busy man. The people that are probably listening are busy. You receive so many emails, you ignore most of them. If they also sent an SMS a little while later in relation to that, that might trigger you, or something in the mail that's relevant, that might trigger you. So it's not like I'm going to send everything to Frank as this mode. It shouldn't be that way.
No, I completely agree. And just as a little aside, that, you know, this is an epic parenting fail I'm about to share with you, Frank. So my daughter wears glasses. I don't know that she actually needs the glasses. I think she really wanted them mainly for fashion, but that's a whole other thing. Anyway, so we got a letter from the optometrist for a recall letter saying that my youngest daughter, Maisie, needed her eyes tested. And that letter is still on our fridge. I tell you, it is still on our fridge 12 months or more later.
Wow.
And so if all that, you know, they've done what I call the post and pray method. And really, what they really should have done is followed up with an SMS or a phone call or some other mode of communication, which you've just spoken about. Because my intention is to take her back to get her eyes tested. And it's just, you're right, everyone's busy, everyone's got conflicting priorities and all that sort of stuff. And it's just that one little nudge that you need to get it done. And in this case, I think the optometry practice is letting themselves down, because we are a willing patient. We're not, you know, we're not kind of dissatisfied in any way. We're just busy. We need actually someone to help us get it all scheduled and done. And I think many of our patients might feel the same way as well.
Definitely, Jesse. A call to action to make you make the move, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So, Frank, what I wanted to ask you about now is a little bit of crystal balling. Again, using, you know, the rearview mirror as a bit of a guide and then kind of looking forward, where do you see dentistry going over the next, you know, 5 or 10 years? And equally, where do you see the developments in software? What do you see as things that are going to shape our future down the next, you know, half decade or even full decade?
Well, the way things are going, we definitely know patients will still be there. They'll still have teeth, thank God. And I don't see dentistry becoming replaced by robots directly. So dentists are pretty safe for a while to come. So in that aspect, it's all cool. What will change, though, there'll be a lot more technology to assist the dentist in both the marketing aspect of the business, like running the business as a business, not so much as the clinical. More automation, more abilities to contact the patients and be in touch with them, and even inviting the patients to be more involved in their own clinical dental health as well, through education and other ways where a dental clinic might open their portal to the patient to allow them to have more information and more chatting rather than telephones and appointments. There'll be a bit more interaction between the dental clinic and the patient themselves, even self-service to a degree based on information. That's one part of it. The other part I see is the clinical aspect, where we're starting to see it now. And we've seen it always. Dentists are really into equipment and into gadgets and new things. That's a great thing. But we'll see, you know, the uptake of CBCT, 3D scanning, X-rays becoming more affordable in the clinic and smaller, easier to handle, more accurate. So that's going to happen. Then there'll be the marriage between an improvement of the marriage between the CBCT and the intraoral digital 3D scanning, which will improve dramatically over time and also come down in price. The elimination essentially of a lot of the manual pouring up of models and trying to take care of dimensional changes in materials and all that crazy stuff that results in things that don't fit very well. So making it, the entire digital workflow will expand further, making for better products and better solutions for the patient. Better fitting, material science is improving. It's crazy. It's like it's a never-ending profession.
It really is. And look, to be honest with you, Frank, I sometimes think how to keep up with all of this, because there's so much change. And I don't know whether, I mean, we've known that change is happening constantly, but I wonder whether the pace of change is faster than it might have been in the past. I'm not sure. But it just seems to me that we're going through a fairly rapid change at the moment in terms of, as you say, the technology developments are going faster and faster. I think you're right, our marketing initiatives are changing quite quickly. Yeah, it's also going to be, I think, you know, if you're a dental technician, you know, that might be a concern for some of the dental techs who, you know, if there's any of those listening to the show, you'd have to think that there'll be an impact of on their workflow or their work stream. Would you agree with that?
I'd agree with that, and I think they'll be the first ones affected. But it's an opportunity for some of them, if not all of them. If they understand that this is where it's headed, it's no different, a little bit like the draftspeople who are doing just designs and doing things on paper for many years, and then out came computers and out came, you know, CAD/CAM software, etc. And the ones that could transition from doing it by hand with pen and paper to doing it on PC were the ones that became really successful. And a dentist really adds value to both the patient and himself by doing the clinical work. The laboratory work is another specialized area. And really, a dentist, yeah, he can do the CAD/CAM and he can design the this and that and do the staining and put things in an oven and so forth and glaze it and what have you. But is that really the best spend of his time? You know, shouldn't be focusing on doing what he's uniquely able to do and leaving these other tasks to others who are much more efficient and much more experienced in doing in volume. And that way, maybe it's not a complete bye-bye dental technician, but rather a reinvention.
Yeah. And again, I think that's just to pick up on a point that you made earlier. I think this is a really profound point, is where there's change, there's opportunity. And what you've articulated just in that example is an opportunity for dental technicians, particularly to, you know, move from perhaps, you know, doing wax ups and pour ups and goodness knows what else to, you know, understanding that digital workflow and repositioning themselves in that space. But more broadly in any business, you know, Frank, I think that, you know, when there's lots of change, there's lots of opportunity and, yeah, rather than sitting in the corner hoping or praying that things would go back to the way they used to be, which isn't going to happen, it's just kind of good to be thinking a little bit further down the path. Like, okay, well, if this is coming, how can I make the most of that opportunity? Where do those opportunities lie? What are the potential threats to that as well? And how do we mitigate the risk? So I think there's a lot of things there for everyone to consider and ponder as they're planning their future around that as well.
Precisely. And it's an important thing to network as well, and be involved with others in your industry and get ideas and not to be isolationist about it.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, just as important to network with people within the industry, I think it's also really important to network from beyond the industry as well. For me, most of my good ideas have come from outside of dentistry and then, yeah, look at how you can make it relevant. And so for me, that's something that I always try to think of. There's a great book called Not Invented Here, and I really love that book. It's just something that I go, oh, that's a cool idea. How can we take that into dentistry, or how can we take that into another sphere? Frank, we've covered a fair bit of territory uphill and down dale. What I wanted to just try and round out our conversation with today, a couple little things. The first thing is, if you had, you know, one or two or even three pieces of advice that we could, you know, put as bullet points on a bumper sticker or even on a billboard, the gospel according to Frank, what would be a couple of key takeaways or salient points you'd want to leave the audience with, mate?
I'd say to everybody, find something that you really want to do most of the time. Like, if you can find a vocation or a passion that you can do 8 out of 10 days, then you've got a wonderful thing and you want to get out of bed to do it, then stick to that one. Be an endless learner and absorb information and not be critical of ideas and judgmental, but to at least give them a chance to see how they do things. Another thing I would pay attention to is to be curious and to ask why about lots of things. Just because things are the way they are doesn't mean they ought to be the way they are. So that would be probably the simplest bullet points. Another thing I have to say, and I thank my lucky stars, where we are today really isn't because of three directors. There's a lot of people behind the scenes, and a lot of our staff have been with us for well over 10 years, 5 and 10 years, and those people contribute tremendously to where we were, to where we are, and to where we're going. So another thing I want to tell people is it's hard to do big things alone. You do need people to make things happen, and we're good at certain things and not everything.
I think that's really sage advice as well. And again, you know, the importance of team and having experts around you to help you, I think, is critical. And you've obviously got a really wonderful team behind you. And you know, that I would assume They've had a large influence in the success of the company over the past 25 years.
Absolutely. They certainly have. I'm thankful, very thankful.
Now, mate, one last thing before we wrap up, if I may. In terms of influences in your life, obviously your mum and dad and observing them in the shop and growing up in that environment is going to be a huge one. But beyond your immediate upbringing, who are the key people that influenced you in your life, people that you would say have been role models or people you've learned things from along the journey, either directly or indirectly? Who would be the people that you'd say, yeah, that person really taught me something? They might not have known it, but they really taught me something.
There's a few unknown people that they're not famous. They're friends. Some of them have taught me things about life and how not to take things too seriously. Try to have fun along the way. In terms of that, it's how to be a human being and how to help others get what they want, and that helps the whole world move on. To be loving as much as possible and try and avoid being vindictive. Of certain things that I've picked up from friends and friends of friends. In terms of business books, I admire a lot of leaders that are out there, Richard Branson being one of them, quite a successful and humble individual.
Yes, he is.
Not afraid to work hard and also have fun hard as well. So that's a good balance there. A lot of people in music, big fan of music as well, and poetry and what they say. So it's a very broad spectrum of influences. Can't really say this one thing. Maybe that's why it's good. Maybe it's better to have a big colourful palette.
Mate, that sounds wonderful, actually. I'm really impressed by, you know, that whole group of people, you know, not even by name, just the, as you say, the eclectic mix of influences obviously contributes a lot to your life and by extension to the businesses that you own and operate. So well done to you. Hey, Frank, on behalf of everyone here at Savvy Dentist, I would really like to take the opportunity to thank you for taking some time out of your day to come and hang with us. Your insights and wisdom are really profound. And, yeah, congratulations on the success of both your businesses, your practice and Centaur Software, but particularly 25 years in Centaur Software, I think is a remarkable achievement, something that you and your team would justifiably feel extraordinarily proud of. So from all of us here, congratulations to you on that, you know, milestone, mate. That's really wonderful.
Jesse, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak to you and by extension to your followers and listeners. And one day we could do it again and hope to meet up with you soon.
Likewise, mate. That'd be wonderful. All right, mate. Take care.
Have a great day.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.